After almost 20 years, the war in Afghanistan ended this past Monday as the final U.S. troops left the country. The troops and their allies were able to evacuate 123,000 Americans, Afghans, and other civilians. Thousands of Afghans hoping to leave their country remain. Meanwhile, Afghan refugees began arriving at Fort McCoy 2 weeks ago. Fort McCoy is a U.S. Army installation between Toma and Sparta in Monroe County. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said more than 10,000 refugees are expected to be housed in the barracks. Staff at Fort McCoy will provide meals and medical help. CBS News reported Wednesday that Wisconsin has the largest population of Afghan refugees, with 6,400 of the 20,000 currently being housed at military installations in five states. Today, we'll talk about what those refugees might need and how our communities can serve them. Welcome to the West Side. I'm Claire Neipert. Glad you're with us today. Joining us this morning are Boyana Zorich-Martinez, Bureau of Refugees Program Director at the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Welcome to the West Side, Boyana.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We also welcome Tru Vu, Executive Director at the Hmong Area Mutual Assistance Association. Good morning, Tru.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here and having this discussion.
And we also have Isak Mohammed, Community Liaison and Health Worker for the Bayern County area. Welcome, Isak.
Thank you, Calera, and thanks for having me this morning.
Well, let's first start with an understanding of what we mean when we say the word refugee. Boyana, what distinguishes a refugee from an expat or an immigrant?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think it's really important to distinguish the difference between the different groups of immigrants that we have in our state and in our country. Oftentimes, we group refugees with other groups and think don't necessarily connect the dots when it comes to how important it is that, refugees are here legally or vetted thoroughly. Are definitely contributing to our economy in so many different ways, paying taxes and so on. So who refugees are? Refugees are people who are outside of their country because they were persecuted or they fear persecution. And then when they are in a country that they initially immigrate to, they apply for a refugee status. Once granted that refugee status, then they are eligible to permanently immigrate to a country like the United States. Then we have other groups like parolees and asylees and so on. But I wanted to, again, make sure that the refugee definition is pretty clear.
Tru, why is it critical that we understand the incoming refugees' culture and history and the kinds of trauma that they have endured?
Clara, can you say that again? You kind of broke out.
Yeah. Why is it critical to understand the incoming refugees' culture, history, and the trauma that they have endured?
I'm sorry, Claire. I still couldn't hear you.
Okay. I'll try again. Why is it crucial to understand the incoming refugees' culture, history, and the kinds of trauma that they have endured?
I think it's so important to think about what they have gone through, to understand who they are, what they believe in, so that we can better find resources to help them. A lot of refugees come from different countries, and if we don't know their cultural background, if we don't know their language, we don't know how to help them. And the thing is, we don't want them to lose and forget who they are as well.
Boyana, what can refugees bring to a community? What can they do that impacts our culture?
Oh, so much. They definitely help with the diversity. They bring cultural components that we might not necessarily have in our neighborhoods. They buy homes, they become entrepreneurs. They pay taxes, they enrich our cuisine. There's just so much that they bring with them, and there are so many benefits to having refugees in our communities, but those are just some of them. It is really important to make sure that, you know, we embrace that as we are richer as communities when we do have refugees as our neighbors.
Isaac, you wear many hats in the Barron community, and one common thread in all of your roles is that you help Somali refugees. I'm wondering, how did you get into this line of work?
Thank you, Clara, for asking me this question. Actually, just talking about refugee perspective and being a person who came to this nation, this great nation, as a refugee, you know, I understand the needs of the, you know, the Somali population in Barron County. You know, we have refugees here. We have most of the Somalis now are, you know, getting the U.S. citizenship. So my role is to work with them, you know, to help them, you know, be a successful, you know, U.S. citizens or residents of Barron County so that they can be, you know, they can be as a normal, you know, residents of Wisconsinites. And the reason why I wear all these hats is to help understand and breach the obstacles and the bricks and the blocks that block refugees and immigrants within our community or the community that they live in. Because, you know, the reason why I have taken all this responsibility is to make sure that refugees are a normal people in Barron County. You know, Barron County residents or immigrants are just a regular people. They contribute to this nation, to this county. They are the, you know, Somalis are the, you know, the highest number employed by, you know, by Genio Turkish store. They are the backbone of the company, to be honest with you. And my job and role is to help connect all the resources, whether it's law enforcement, court system, health and human services, schools, you know, whether it, you know, all the all sectors to help refugees and immigrants to success and, you know, easily adjust and adapt. That's why I took this role, and I am glad I am able to serve it and do it. Thanks.
And Isaac, you mentioned that you are a refugee yourself. You came here as a refugee. How do your lived experiences kind of help you do the work that you do to help others?
Well, you know, coming to this nation as a refugee, I mean, just going back, you know, again, refugees are not people who just want to go, leave their country and come to any other country. You know, they don't have the ambitions to go to any country that they want to live, but only that they are forced to flee their homeland and they have no option because of persecution, because of a disaster or a situation that occurred that's life-threatening. So coming as a refugee to this great nation, I first of all thank the U.S. government and refugee resettlements and the U.S. refugee mission in Africa who understand, you know, the refugee lives. Because, you know, working with the United UN Refugee Agents and working with the U.S. Refugee Mission has really, you know, equipped me to understand more about the resettlement process. And, you know, for me, coming as a refugee to this nation is really, you know, it was not easy and it was not my decision to come to this nation, great nation. But I appreciate what, you know, what I was given back. And I am willing to give back to your question. I am someone who wants to contribute. I sometimes don't sleep in the middle of the night, getting a phone call from the, you know, the emergency department, crisis line, you know, to help people, you know, a human being like me. And I stand for human being as a human soul. We need to help each other. And refugees contribute to this nation. Just looking back to me, what I do here, I'm someone who is willing to help all the departments, all the local agencies. You know, I sit in a local, you know, city, county, schools, you know, all this within the community. And I'm also the director of the Somali community in Barron County. So that's also additional, you know, services that I do for a volunteer to help refugees and immigrants. So I just want to put an example as myself, a person who is like me, wants to volunteer numerous hours, wants to work with the local government, wants to work with the local community, the church. You know, there are times that I make outreaches and presentations to help refugees understand and what refugee is and why people are coming here. And you know what? The refugees and the immigrants who live in Bering County are part of this community. They contribute and pay taxes like any other person who live in, you know, in the area that, or any city. Or there are people who understand that, oh, they get all these services. Oh, they're getting the food stamps. No, they are very hardworking people. And they are people who are just regular people, human beings, regular citizens, US citizens, who vote, who talk about their rights, and who wants to be as a normal people as Wisconsinites. Thank you.
And let's get an idea of the number of, when we talk about refugees, let's get some context on that. Boyana, how many refugees are there globally, and how many actually get to immigrate?
Yeah, great question. There is 26.4 million refugees out there right now, I believe, based on the latest statistics that I've read. And I think it's really important to mentioned that half of those are children, just to put things into a perspective. And actually only 2 to 5%, depending on the different sources that, again, I've read from, but only about 2 to 5% of all world refugees get to actually immigrate to a country where they want to live or a country that will accept them. So that's a pretty small number.
I want to move to you, True. You started as a director at the Eau Claire Area Hmong Mutual Assistance Association this summer. And I'm wondering, in that role, how do you work with refugees?
So in my line of work, that I've always worked with Hmong families in the Hmong community. I used to work for the Eau Claire Area School District. And a lot of these folks are, you know, families of refugee. And I assisted them in realizing all the different needs that they have. There's a lot of gaps, and you know, we have to be here to support them. So here at the agency, you know, we help with citizenship, and we help with filling it out, you know, helping with their green cards to make sure that it's renewed on time. So those are the different types of services that we have here, but also, you know, just creating programs such as, you know, different for teaching English to our families, as well as to the children, to making sure that they have the right set of tools. So when they do go to school, they have all the support that they need, that their parents can help them.
Moving forward in this newer role for you, what are your goals as director?
Yeah, my goal as a director here is to really create programs to help the Hmong community at large and those who are not in the Hmong community too. I am here to be in a collaboration, to be here as an organization to stand and empower the Eau Claire community.
Boyana, how are refugee services structured in our state? How does the Bureau of Refugees program, which you're the director of, fit into that picture?
Yeah. I'm so glad you asked. So the Bureau of Refugee Programs, of which I serve as a director, is also known, I would say, by other agencies and nationally recognized as the State Refugee Office. So every state in the United States that actively resettles refugees has a designated State Refugee Office. And that for Wisconsin would be the Bureau of Refugee Programs within the Department of Children and Families. And also every state that actively resettles refugees has a designated state refugee coordinator who helps represent the interest of that state as it relates to refugee resettlement. And that, again, would be my role. My team, the most amazing team out there of 9 individuals, including our state refugee health coordinator, who's under the Department of Health Services, works very hard to oversee the programs, the number of different refugee programs throughout the state, and works very closely with our partners, the many stakeholders, contracted and non-contracted partners, to provide direct services to refugees. So we receive federal funding from Department of Health and Human Services and the Office of Refugee Resettlement under DHHS to contract with those many partners across the state who provide direct services to refugees. And those agencies differ in terms of their sector or in terms of the services that they provide. So we have four different resettlement agencies who are actively resettling refugees in Wisconsin. There are two in Milwaukee. There's Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, located in Milwaukee. There's the International Institute of Wisconsin, also in Milwaukee. There is the Jewish Social Services in the Dane County in Madison, and the World Relief of the Fox Valley area. So those are four different resettlement agencies, or we also call them VOLAGs, or voluntary resettlement agencies. So I may use those two terms interchangeably. And then there's a number of other partners, W-2 agencies who provide TANF and refugee cash assistance services, employment programs. There are school districts who we work with, the health department, clinics, health and mental health providers, providers who offer English as a second language classes, as well as services to older refugees, citizenship, and so on and so forth. So there's a number of somewhere between, at any given time, between 20 and 30 contractors who directly work with our Bureau of Refugee Programs to then make sure that they provide services under those programs.
Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. I'm just wondering, Bayana, what inspired you to work with refugees and in this line of work?
So I, too, am a former refugee. I came to the U.S. In 99, back from former Yugoslavia, in the aftermath of the Bosnian War. And really had felt, just like Isak said, felt the path to resettlement on my own skin. Didn't speak the language, didn't know the culture. I mean, outside of 90210, what we saw on TV, which has nothing to do with really how American life works. But anyhow, that was pretty much it. That was what started my initial interest in working with refugees then. I worked at one of the resettlement agency at that time, Jewish Family Services here in Milwaukee, and worked as the a case provider, a case manager, employment counsel. You know, there are different types of roles that I had, and also coordinated the efforts of the Milwaukee Area Refugee Consortium for service provision for refugees. And then I went on to do other things. And then when I heard through some sources, both here at the state and externally, that this position was something that was all open as to represent and help shape the programs that I once benefited from, I jumped on that. And I was very happy and honored to have had the opportunity, you know, to have been offered the opportunity to now serve as the state refugee coordinator and help again shape those programs that I once benefited from. So I have the best job ever. I have the best team ever. And I am just ecstatic, you know, daily to have, again, the opportunity to work with refugees and those many service providers who put their hearts and souls on the line to help our new neighbors.
We're talking about Western Wisconsin's refugee history and how to help the thousands of Afghan refugees now coming to our state on the west side today. Our guests are True Vu, the executive director of the Eau Claire Area Hmong Mutual Assistance Association, Isak Mohammed, community liaison and health worker for the Barron County area, and Boyana Zorich Martinez, Bureau of Refugees Program Director at the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families, here with us today. What are your questions or comments do you have about the arrival of refugees in your community? You can join this conversation by calling 715-471-6490. That's a new phone number. That's 715-471-6490. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11, it's the Larry Mueller Show. Design is just as important to an outdoor garden as it is an indoor garden. Larry talks about what you should consider when designing your outdoor oasis. That's up next on this station. The next week on the West Side, we're talking about a Wisconsin tradition, hunting. A DNR program called Gun Hunt for Hunters with Disabilities is trying to make one of our state's traditions more accessible. We'll talk with a Western Wisconsin man who's been helping everyone hunt since the 90s. Well, today on the West Side, we're talking about Western Wisconsin's refugee history and how to help the thousands of Afghan refugees that are now coming to our state. You can call us at 715-471-6490 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. The Hmong people arrived in Wisconsin in the 1970s and 80s, and according to the Wisconsin Historical Society, by 2005, Wisconsin had the third largest Hmong population in the country, after Minnesota and California. Drew is a member, active member of the Hmong community. How have you seen the treatment of Hmong citizens and refugees change over the years?
That's a really great question, Clara. The thing is, you know, I too am a refugee, and I came to the United States when I was just a little over a year old. So my experiences with being a refugee is very different from my parents who came here when they're in their 20s. And I think the treatment back then, and you know, growing up, I grew up in a very closed, my friends and family were just a lot of the Hmong folks, and you know, a lot of people who empowered me were my teachers, and so I had really positive people, role models in my life. But then I think about my parents and what they've gone through, and I remember growing, you know, when I was growing up, my dad came home. And he was so frustrated, and he was telling us, you know, his job was to go and fix computers and printers. And he went to a business, and the secretary at that place asked him, "Oh, you know, you're Hmong, you must eat dog." And then he replied back right away, "Oh, you know, you're white, you must be cannibal." And she was like shocked at that, you know, response, like, "No, I don't. Why would you say that?" And then he asked, "You know, why would you say that to me? Just because I'm Hmong and Southeast Asian that, you know, that you would think that I would eat dog?" And he's like, "Well, I can say that you eat people because there's a man in Milwaukee who's cannibal, and he, you know, he was eating people from his freezer." And for me to think, how often he was asked that question for him to come up with a response like that so quickly to her. For me to think what he has gone through being a refugee coming to the United States and how people treated us. I mean, even when I was working in a restaurant, this man came up to me when I was at the till, and you know, he called me a gook, and I was appalled by that. And I couldn't imagine why someone would call me that. That was my first time ever, like someone calling me with a racist remark. And I didn't know how to respond to that because my parents have been so wonderful you know, making sure that I didn't get these negative remarks. But we see, though, that as growing up, a lot of our Hmong boys are part of gangs because they didn't know who to turn to support each other. There weren't people who could help support them. And the sad fact is that a lot of folks turned to gangs so they could protect one another. And so I hope that we can be better, that now, when the second wave of the Hmong refugees came in 2004 to 2007 there, you know, we were more proactive and we were more accepting because of the Hmong folks who did come here in the 1970s to the early 90s. But there were a lot of backlashes too. I think also with education, they didn't really know what to do. They didn't know how to help and support those who came in the early 70s, in the mid 70s to the early 80s. I remember my preschool teacher, and I'm still in contact with her too. She talked about how she didn't have the support to come up with classes or like how to support all these Hmong children because these teachers didn't know how to communicate with us because they didn't speak Hmong. Well, then all these Hmong folks, you know, we didn't have any bilingual education assistance to help them in the classrooms too. So they had to come up with a system as well. And, you know, once after 3 years of doing this program, they were finally able to put all these Hmong, Hmong students into a room and create a program to help support the Hmong students and their parents. So I think with that, we need to see what has worked in the past and what works now, how we could be more accepting for those who are coming in. And now we have technology on our side as well, versus in the past, we didn't have that. If we want to know about the Afghans' culture and beliefs and the language, we have that access tool. And so we have to use these resources on behalf to help us to be more proactive.
Mm. Eau Claire is now home to several events and festivals that celebrate Hmong culture and traditions. And I think another part of like what you're talking about is, you know, another issue is the preservation of Hmong tradition. Do you think mm-hmm. that those events can help the community preserve that?
Absolutely. In the Hmong culture, we don't do a lot of festivities. Our main festivity is the Hmong New Year. And that's why it's such a huge event. And a lot of people come from all over the state, even, you know, Minnesota, to come and join us for events because the Hmong New Year is so important to us. But then, you know, we have like the Hmong Heritage Month. And the reason why we have that is because the Hmong is not, sadly, in our textbooks to teach our children, to teach the Americans about our part in the Vietnam War, because we were part of a secret war. We still hear people saying, who are the Hmong people? You know, why are you here? And some people tell us to go back to our country. It's like, we don't have a country to go back to because of our alliance with the United States. And so for us to be able to come up with festivities and for us to celebrate the Hmong is such a crucial thing in our community.
Thank you, True. I want to ask Isak to reflect as you did. Somali refugees, as Isak mentioned, began arriving in Barron in the 90s, and a report from the Western Wisconsin Advisory Committee to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights says that the Barron community wasn't really prepared for that population. Isak, what were the challenges that Somali refugees faced over the years in Barron?
Thank you, Clara. Yes, it is true that the Somali refugees came in the 90s and they faced a lot of challenges. I have heard, I was not in the country at that time, but I have heard from the community members that even Somalis were refused to be, you know, to be a tenant or even rent an apartment or houses. It was not good news for one of the early Somalis who came to Barron. And the first students who came to Barron started school, it was end of 99 in 2000. I have heard that there were multiple fightings. I've heard from the teachers that there were multiple fightings between the Somali students and the local students because of not being prepared, because of not being knowing who you are, where you are from, you know, that has really become an obstacle. And also the language barrier was, you know, it's also a big obstacle because it is, you know, a very, you know, compulsive situation that where one does, we speak another language and the other one doesn't speak. And people think that when you speak, when you talk, some of them, you think that you're talking about them when you laugh. You know, that has created a problem, what I've heard from people who are here. And there was a fight, you know, between the Somali boys and the locals. And, you know, it was a struggle, but late, you know, working with the school system and, you know, I joining in the 2013 and, you know, we have, you know, made a progress of relationship where soccer was created. Soccer, you know, Somali's population are the number one sports are soccer, and they really love, you know, playing soccer, and you know, they go all states, they even travel Madison to Eau Claire. So the soccer program was really, you know, a good program that was created that school had, and I also, you know, I even coached the soccer boys at the high school, Barron High School, where I currently work with the schools. So the soccer program helped the relationship between the Somali refugees and the locals because they have known that the talented of the refugees, how they contributed to Barron City and how they presented through athletic and also cross country. You know, we have had a good number of Somalis who ran for cross country. So relationship after you know, coming until you know, I came, you know, people have been, you know, known, you know, just knowing each other, and that has helped. You know, Genio Turk Istoro is the biggest employer for the Somali population in Barron County. Though the community is now expanding, working in other jobs in Turtle Lake, in Rice Lake, but before, the primary employer was Genio Turk Istoro. And I have heard that the one of the employers of Genio Turk Istoro have escorted this Somali refugees, and have asked the locals to rent, you know, or allow them to rent houses or apartments, which was really not easy. I was told that one gentleman gave them one room, and there were like more than 10 people living in one bedroom. You know, that was not an easy situation. You know, and that was even in Rice Lake, Barron, city of Barron. People from Barron have even refused them to rent. Then later on, you know, everything has opened up where the Somalis now rent the largest apartments in Barron City. All of them, most of the people who live there are Somalis. Almost everyone living there are Somalis. Somalis now own houses in Barron, including myself. I own a house. So, you know, they have expanded themselves. They have shown the community that they are part of the community. They have contributed. The tornado that happened in 2017, we have contributed and became part of the investigation when Jamie Claus was abducted. So we are part of the community. Then when I came, I became so active in the community and started collaborating and working with the local agencies, community, you know, gatherings. We have created, you know, cultural events. I cooperating with Barron High School, we have created cultural events where everyone, Hmong community, you know, Chinese, Hispanic communities, everyone coming together. And we have, I think our first cultural event started in 2018. We have heard a turnout of over 500 people coming from all around Northwestern Wisconsin. You know, it was really, we shared the food, we shared the cultural dancing, the Somali chanting called Danto. That has really connected our community to be known in the region and to be welcomed. You know, and also, I've also created, being the Somali community director here in Barron County, when I came in 2013, I created programs that help during our winter soccer programs, utilizing one of the school buildings in Barron Area School District. And, you know, Barron Area School District have done a lot to connect and work with Somali refugees, you know, with the ESL program, you know, utilizing, you know, the school services. And, you know, I have also created tournaments that connect the Northwestern Wisconsin region. You know, we have soccer programs that connects all regions, Hayward, Eau Claire, Rice Lake, you know, St. Croix Falls. You know, all that has created a good connection to the Somali population within the locals and within the community that they live in. They are now part of the community. They contribute. They pay taxes. They are the biggest and highest number employed by Genio Turk Istoro. As I said, they are, you know, loved in the community. Yes, there was some, you know, racial remarks before, but as of right now, knowing each other, you know, being working as an outreach, having all these cultural events, which we actually lastly made it an annual cultural event with Barron School Area District, that has really shaped and helped the community connection. And there's one thing that I want to add, you know, if, you know, say that, Clara, now you are taken to a community that nobody knows you, who you are, what your language is, there's always suspicious situation that, oh, who she is, what is she going to do? Oh, what is going to, you know, what is she, we don't know, you know, we need to watch her, you know. Those are the things that American people have, you know, not the bigger cities, but the rural area, which was really tough for the Somali community in Barron in the 90s. Those are the things that had happened. And the only ways to success and to overcome those obstacles are just to show who you are. So the survivor community has shown who they are for Benin County communities, just to, you know, be part of the community, contribute when there's a problem. The tornado, we reached out. When Jamie Close, you know, was abducted, the tragedy that happened, we reached out. We cooked Somali. Somalis contributed food to the law enforcement. We had over 100 law enforcement, including FBI and the DOJ. You know, working with the community, being together, being, you know, a good neighbor is what has really helped the Somali community. And I also, for sure, you know, put the word out there. If you are being known in any community you go and where you are the first immigrant or refugees there, it's really a struggle, but you can overcome through working with the community, the worship places, the local government. Those are the areas and the successful thing that has happened in Benin County. And I was among those have put and broke those bridges. Thank you.
Mm. And now I want to go to Bayana. Just briefly, can you give us an overview of the refugee experience in Wisconsin over the years?
Well, thank you. I was very carefully listening to both of my colleagues here, and I think they're right in pretty much everything they've said. I do support that, and I've heard those types of that type of feedback a lot over the years. I just want to point out that really Wisconsin has always been a welcoming community. I mean, there's no question about it. There's always beginning struggles when there's a new community establishing anywhere. To, you know, Isak's point, I think that's really important to acknowledge. Anytime you're new somewhere, you know, people have questions and there are struggles and you're trying to figure things out. One thing I will agree with, definitely, I mean, another thing I will agree with, I should say, is the food is the language of all. You may not speak the language of your neighbor, but everyone speaks food, right? So I think that's really important. You know, we've had different communities and build in our state over the years. Hmong starting in 1970s, and then after that, followed by different communities. You know, we have Somalians, we have former Yugoslavians, we have Bhutanese, we have Congolese refugees throughout the state. Actually, that's probably the largest growing community of refugees in our state right now. And then we have Burmese with all the different ethnic groups of Karenchen, Rohingya, and so on. Milwaukee is known as one of the, if not the largest numbered Rohingya refugee site. So, I mean, there's just so many different communities and so many different groups. When you start something, it is hard. It is tough. There's barriers. There's challenges. There's ways that, you know, you come across different things that you might not anticipate. But every single community has successfully established themselves that started coming in our state and has been supported by neighbors, by local officials, by so many different people because they see how great these people are, you know, how they contribute, how they care about their neighbor, about their, you know, everyone around them. And that's really, really important. So I know we don't have too much time yet, and I'm sure you have a lot more questions, but I just wanted to make that point that, you know, in the beginning, every time a new community is establishing, there are challenges, but it is our job as the service providers and those who coordinate, collaborate, and communicate about the program to educate, to advocate, and make sure that we answer those tough questions. We answer those tough questions about, you know, who people are, religion, race, ethnicity, vetting. All those things are really important to be addressed, because if people have questions, if they have issues, if they're thinking, oh my God, there's something that's not right here, they have the right to know. And I think we need to have those conversations. So I will stop there, but thank you for that question.
Yeah, and Calera, I just want to add that, you know, Benin County is, you know, has welcomed the Somali refugees. You know, they love Somali refugees now. And as I say, they contribute to the community. Now the Somali community own businesses. They own, they run, they had two restaurants here and they still have restaurants open here. They have other businesses, they have food, cultural food that they sell in their businesses. You know, there are things that to consider, you know, they contribute a lot. So, you know, just, you know, people ask a lot, how did you end up a small city in rural Wisconsin? You know, it is, you know, it is something that, you know, people need to know that it is, it's a very peaceful community that where no one is afraid to be targeted. Yeah, and I just want to thank the locals. Thanks.
We're talking about Western Wisconsin's refugee history, and now we're going to talk about how we can help the thousands of Afghan refugees that are now coming to our state. Our guests are True Vu, the executive director of the Hmong Mutual, the Eau Claire Area Hmong Mutual Assistance Association, Isak Mohammed, a community liaison and health worker for the Barron County area, and Boyana Zorich Martinez, Bureau of Refugees Program Director at the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. All of those people are here with us today. What questions or comments do you have about how you can help refugees as they arrive in our communities? You can join this conversation by calling 715-471-6490 or by emailing us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Clara Neipert. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in our region, Badlands Snow Park in Hudson will host the 35th Midwest Champion Sheepdog Trials this weekend from now until September 6th. WPR is one of the sponsors of this dog competition. It is the second oldest in the United States, and it's open to the public. Visit WWSDA.com to learn more about the event. Every Thursday at 10 on this station, it's Spectrum West, where Al Ross explores the music, arts, culture, and humanities in Western Wisconsin. This show includes in-depth, behind-the-scene interviews and stories about area writers, musicians, theaters, visual arts, and much more. That's Spectrum West, Thursdays at 10 on this station. Well, now I want to turn to a question we have from a listener. Gina in Eau Claire wants to know how people can help Afghan refugees and what organizations they can kind of turn to and how to do that as an individual. Boyana, I'm going to direct this question to you. How can someone help?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I just want to acknowledge that we are getting a lot of calls, a lot of emails, a lot of questions to our Department of Children and Families refugee inbox. I will say hundreds and hundreds of those is what we've already looked at logged and are in communication with those people who've contacted us. And I just want to thank them first from the bottom of my heart on behalf of all those refugees, on behalf of all those people who are currently at Fort McCoy and all across the United States, because Fort McCoy, as you know, is not the only base. I just want to make sure that, you know, it's very clear that operations at Fort McCoy are really the federal efforts, and they're being handled by U.S. Department of Defense, state, and Homeland Security. So we are collaborating with those partners to help get out there what's needed, but we're not necessarily overseeing those efforts. So I just want to make sure that that's pretty clear. However, as I said, we are collaborating and helping contribute to that. So if you go to DCF, dcf.wi.gov/refugee, you're going to get to a page that's going to help you or that's going to link you to the area that says how you can help. And there is information on the organizations that are currently connecting donations, including American Red Cross, Catholic Charities, Team Rubicon. And you can see there what, you know, what works best for you are those donations of clothing, hygiene items, or is that monetary donation or whatever it is that you feel like you can contribute. You can find the information on that on our page. And again, I will repeat that dcf.wi.gov/refugee. Refugee/help is directly to the help page, But you can also email us, and that's all going to be on that page as well, if you have specific questions or if you want us to take the information on anything else that you think you can help with. We're getting information and offers from people with to help with employment, housing, volunteering, legal immigration help. Those things are just so very valuable. However, I will say that because none of the people at Fort McCoy have yet been resettled or anywhere else in the United States. There is the federal partners are still working through what that's going to look like. And therefore, we cannot deploy some of the resources like housing or employment because no one's yet left the base. We are collecting that information, and when the time comes, we're going to be working with local organizations who are providing those specific services and assistance, like resettlement agencies, W-2 agencies, and so on, to connect them to the people who are offering help. Mm. I hope that helps.
We are talking a lot about like physical goods, which of course are very, very important. But earlier we talked a little bit about the refugee experience and how they might bring some trauma with them. So True, I'm wondering how important would it be for these refugees to have space with other refugees?
That's a great question, Clara. We need to have, and I think we talked a little bit about this too in our call, was to have a safe space for people to come, you know, and have a space for the youth to come together and talk about all the things that they're going through, you know, what has happened to them back at, you know, in their country coming here. They're, you know, to have a place of familiar ground to talk about the things that they're going through, and then having a space for parents as well, parents and elders, to come and talk about what they've gone, because their experiences are going to be very different from their children. And I think it's very important that mental health is something that we keep as a priority, as a service to them, because if they can't be able to support themselves, how can they support their own families?
And then Isaac, very briefly, as we wrap up this conversation, how can we treat these refugees with dignity and respect?
I will start on that. Thanks, Clara. You know, every human being deserves to be respected, and every human being has a dignity. So my suggestion to Wisconsinites are, remember, these are refugees, and again, they are allies. I would say that they are not, I would say that they are not like a regular refugee who was, you know, resettled through the agencies, who have gone through a proper, travel or, you know, departure. You know, regular refugees come through, paperwork. They leave their houses, it's even a refugee camp. They, you know, they're at least a little bit, you know, prepared to come compared to Afghan refugees. Afghan refugees will need more of our attention. I'm talking about nationwide, but specifically in Wisconsinites. I would suggest to help them out, to respect their culture, to respect what they believe, you know, welcome them in your community. Remember, they have helped our forces and our defense department. There are some of these Afghan refugees lost their families because they were with us. So to be honest, you know, we need to help and step out and, you know, respect their culture, respect their religion, you know, welcome them in your community, help them out, show them out community centers, you know, have them feel that this is their home, because they don't have a home as of right now. This is the only hope that they have. And I am glad that the U.S. federal agents and the Federal Homeland Security and the Defense Department has assisted the Afghan allies. We have lost our U.S. Army there in the process of, you know, getting out Afghan refugees and allies there. So all that sacrifice we made, we need to see the progress that these people are, you know, easily and safely integrating, and they are helped and welcomed in anywhere in Wisconsin or in the United States. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great hour talking about Western Wisconsin's refugee history and how to help the thousands of refugees now coming to our state. I want to thank today's guests, Truvu, the executive director of the Eau Claire Area Hmong Mutual Assistance Association, Isaac Mohammed, the community liaison and health worker for the Barron County area, and Boyana Zorich Martinez, Bureau of Refugees Program Director at the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Rick Wire, Shireen Seward, and Joy Ratch Kramer helped produce today's program, and our producer is Kate Springer. She also manages publicity. Thank you for joining us this morning. I'm Clara Neipert. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.